Yeah, I'm हरे हे ओम
सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sutra 17. Love for the Supreme is natural, spiritual, and brings the highest bliss. Love what is not the Supreme is artificial, material, and brings only suffering. Right. So Prabhupada has made the point that the difficulty comes up is that the living entities are meant for enjoyment, but it's not by endeavoring for it for themselves separately. They endeavor for it in relationship to the Lord. So they're trying to help the Lord in His pleasure, right? Because then there's a point, the common point, right? So if we can be happy on our own, but we're more happy when we see others happy, so why not more than that when we see God happy, right? So that kind of, that element, then that is the highest spiritual platform, right? Of spiritual, means the highest platform of spiritual interest. It would be when our interest is simply seeing that Krishna is satisfied, right? So everyone's working together for that, then everybody can cooperate together. Otherwise, anything else, there's going to be a clash. But when it's Krishna, then there's no clash. Here someone may ask, if the soul is by nature spiritual and blissful, then how does he come in touch with unwanted material things? Fearing that someone would ask this question, the author speaks the following words. Suffering are caused by the soul's misidentification with the material body. Commentary. Oh, I see. Sufferings are caused by the soul's misidentification with material body. In the Shruti Shastra is said, quote, identifying with matter, the soul takes birth in a mother's womb. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:63, the Lord says, when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. In the Katha Upanishad 2:3:15, it is said, when all the heart's knots are cut, the mortal becomes immortal. That is the teaching of scripture. In the Ishopanishad Mantra 3, it is said, the killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the world of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Right? So the killer of the soul, how this comes up is that, because the whole idea is the annihilation of the soul. To the path of Gyan then takes it that the soul is suffering the material world. So if the soul gives up this identification with the world and gives up its independence, right, that's independent position, and merges with the Supreme, then it will be happy, right? So by doing that means that the soul doesn't exist anymore as an individual. So that is the killer of the soul, right? So we can see here is that the faithless, they go to the world of faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So that didn't actually get them any benefit. Right? Now one would think, now they're jnanis, they're very renounced, they're uplifting, they're getting freed from material existence. So why isn't that special? Why would they go to a place of ignorance? Right? Because the soul actually gets happiness, right, from serving. Right, in his individual capacity. So if we get rid of his existence, then how will he be able to function, right, in his actual natural capacity? So that means it's not spiritual, because spiritual means he's acting in his natural capacity. Material means he's acting in some variety of conditioned way. So here they're overemphasizing one aspect of a conditioned life, right? Means the element of just being, not recognizing the Lord, right? Extreme atheism, right? Like that, probably popular show, right? Extreme atheism, like that, on HBO, something. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes up is that he's identifying with the matter. He's thinking he's identifying with the spiritual, but God, there's no such thing as God that you merge into. You know what I'm saying? The living entity doesn't do that. He is a separated part and parcel. Right? He never becomes the Lord. So his whole idea is not spiritual. In concept, we call them transcendentalists because they're trying to go beyond the material world. Transcendentalist means going beyond the material world. Right? So he's saying, so in one sense we'll call that spiritual because the spiritual world is beyond that. But technically speaking, it's not spiritual, it's material. Because their concept of it isn't spiritual. Because spiritual means that it's to do with Krishna. Right? Material means it's not to do with Krishna. So their thing is not to do with Krishna. It's just a very seemingly sattvic form. But it's still, its result is ignorance. Right? So in the purport to Mantra 13, then Prabhupada says, the living being is perpetually suffering in different types of bodies from the material miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. The human form of life offers one a chance to get out of this entanglement simply by reestablishing the lost relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Right? So it comes back always down to this. It's always establishing your relationship with Krishna. So one has to understand is whatever one is doing, that should be the purpose, right? That means, yukta vairagya means how to connect yourself to Krishna through a variety of things that may not normally be what you'd use. It doesn't mean yukta vairagya, it doesn't mean just getting something practically done. You know what I'm saying? Yukta vairagya means you're connecting to Krishna. But from the point of, it's still vairagya in that you're not trying to get anything from it, right? So if you're trying to get something from it, and it's not necessarily to do with Krishna, it's just practically getting something done, then that one wouldn't call that Yukta Vairagya. Right? Because the whole point, Prabhupada is saying, simply by establishing a lost relationship, that's all. That means everything in Krishna consciousness is simply for that purpose, not another purpose. Does that make sense? Means we create material facility so that we can serve Krishna. But if all we do is create material facility, right, and then we say it's Yukta Vairagya, how is that service? Okay, by doing that, by working, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, all year, and so by doing that, it affords us that on Janmashtami evening in time for, darshan and prasad, we come to the temple, then okay, it's something. But one might say, is that actually worth it? That much overbalance in facility and only very minimal service. Does that make sense? So one might consider, one may adjust one's lifestyle so that a more consistent service can be rendered. Right? And then in that consistency, that will actually give you happiness, because happiness means connection to Krishna. Happiness doesn't mean material facility. Right? Material facility that can be used in Krishna's service, then that's nice. It's good, it's not a problem. But it's not the facility itself. That is the important element. Yeah? In Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is stated, sin, the root of sin, and ignorance are three causes of suffering. In the purport to Mantra 1, it is stated, quote, the root of sin is deliberate disobedience of the laws of nature through disregarding proprietorship of the Lord. Disobeying the laws of nature or the order of the Lord brings ruin to a human being. Conversely, one who is sober, who knows the laws of nature, and who is not influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion, is sure to be recognized by the Lord and thus become eligible to go back home, back to the eternal home. Right? So sin means not following the Lord's, the laws of nature. But here it's saying the root of sin is deliberate disobedience of those rules. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So if you don't see the importance, so deliberate means you don't see the importance of it. Not deliberate means that, you thought about it and said, hey, I'm going to do that. Right? That's what we talked about yesterday. That's the cheap form of bureaucratic management. Right? Is they just see a rule and they take the word. Deliberate means that it was you wanted to do that, so therefore, then anything anybody does is deliberate. It's everything anybody does is premeditated. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that. It means here, deliberate disobedience means you don't see the importance of that rule. That's deliberate disobedience. Right? Just being sinful means that you're just overwhelmed by the modes of nature, overwhelmed by sense gratification or whatever it happens to be, position or fame or... You understand? But the root of sin is that you are committed to that this kind of lifestyle is important. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. That's what has to be rooted out. So it says, one who is sober knows the laws of nature, means what they're there, why they're there, what's going on by the laws. Because laws of nature means they don't change. He didn't say the rules, given by the Shastra or that. He said laws of nature. Laws of nature don't change. So that means those things that you cannot get around, probably even uses some terms like that. Oh, insurmountable? Or no, like that. Law, it means you can't get around them. He uses a different word.
Undefinable.
Yeah, something like that. It just means you can't get by. There's no question of having any alternative than following the laws of nature. Like that. So, yes.
So, deliberate disobedience means consciously committing sin. Consciously.
Yes, that's consciously. Just being attracted by or overwhelmed by, that's not deliberate.
No.
Very, very important. You don't understand this point, you will be destroyed as a manager, as someone who gives punishment. That's what Manu says. Someone who misapplies punishment will be destroyed by punishment personified. And not only him, his family, anything to do with him and his family, his service, even whatever is dependent upon his service, it'll all be destroyed. People don't, it's just like this. The devotees will say, why do we need to follow Vedic culture? That's deliberate disobedience. Right? Deliberate, you know, means you'll have hard forms of this and soft forms of it. So hard form is a determination, you know, which is underlying even the soft form, there's a determination. But the soft form, maybe you know it's not right, but you somehow or another can't get by with it. So that's seen in a different light than those who, specifically are against. You know, this idea is, all this stuff is old, 5,000 years old, it doesn't apply now. This is deliberate disobedience. Though, because of the wording and all that, and you use the popular and put it into context of time, place, and circumstance, it sounds very intellectual and very practical and very logical, but it's still deliberate disobedience. All it is that I do not want to make any adjustments for God's laws. How I think I am, that false identity, I want to maintain. And I will therefore then call it yukta vairagya, when I'm not vairagya or yuktaing anything at all. All I am is being myself as I was before I joined Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So there's a fine point that has to be made there, if it's not. You have to see what's the motive. Like that, yes. Yeah, philosophical and sensual. That means philosophically, yeah. Means if you have a philosophy about it that it's fine, then you get 100 times the reaction than somebody who just follows it, right? Means you follow something bogus, you get the reaction of it. You preach it, you get 100 times the reaction. Like that. That's why one has to be very, very careful. So this deliberate, so the root of sin basically means the desire to be the controller and enjoyer, right? And one's committed to that. So to that degree that one is sober, he knows the laws of nature, then he doesn't become overly influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion. Notice he doesn't say all, unnecessary, right? Because you have to do, the soul is attached anyway. It's dependent, right? So it's just a matter of that kind of whatever is there is in connection with the Lord. If it's above that, unnecessary, then that gets in the way, right? So that will develop that sin or the root of sin, ignorance, all this kind of things will come up. Is that okay? So it's a fine point you have to see here. So it's a fine point that one has to consider, and it's also a point that people shouldn't take advantage of. Because we see is that Krishna, it's because of, you know, so many things that Krishna can correct it. He can forgive one for it, right? Because one is actually trying to correct the situation, right? There may be mistakes made, but still, that's appreciated by Krishna that you're making the effort. Right, but if you're only saying you're making the effort but you're not, then that won't work very good. You know, or if you say, you know, what's the importance of it? It doesn't matter, then that also won't get you a good result. You know what I'm saying?
Just going back to that, it seemed like you're making a really strong point about a manager understanding this point. Could you explain that a little more?
The manager is just the one who affects it, the community and all that. Devotees many times will take it that anything done wrong by a devotee, as long as it's to do with morality. If it's to do with wrong in devotional service or philosophy or culture, that doesn't matter necessarily. Those will be taken lightly. You have to be broad-minded, we can't be narrow-minded, we can't be dogmatic. But when it comes to morality, then generally the devotees are as dogmatic as it gets. Like that. So then What's that word? Yes, dogmaticians. Yes. So, the important thing is what is going wrong? So the point is it's like this. You have something nice to talk about if something's really bad, right? It'll keep you busy for a few days. Otherwise, it's just something that you mention that, you know, and, you know, everybody's heard about it. Who cares? But if it's serious enough, even if they heard about it, they still want to talk about it. So one, it's good gossip. Two is that the worse you can make it sound, the more you feel you're getting done. You know what I'm saying? So it's not trying to minimize anything going wrong. But it means it's over here, unnecessary attachment or aversion. So this is unnecessary aversion, right? Or unnecessary attachment to mundane platforms. So then someone does something wrong, they always take it to the worst, and, you know, any kind of, you know what I'm saying, just to find some fault. You know, does this make sense? So one has to be very, very careful that exactly what's wrong, that's what's dealt with. And the process of dealing with it should create, you know, education or enlightenment or practice for that individual to come to the actual standard platform. That you punish something and it remains that way, that doesn't work. You know, someone has done some major sinful activity like that. They've murdered someone, so therefore the state then, you know, gives them capital punishment. But from that, in the next life, they'll be completely squeaky clean. You know, they'll be completely purified of it and start afresh. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is with the Vedic concept, is it should purify you actually of the thing, and you start fresh. And when you start, no one should bring up what was there before, because that's the whole point, you know? So, you know, if capital punishment is there, then it's natural it's going to be fresh, because in the next life, no one knows who you are and what you did. But in this life, it's still the same principle. It's when you're punished, no one should bring that up again, right? So to bring it up is sinful to, you know what I'm saying? So it's an attachment to this platform of morality. Because it's not coming from Dharma. It's not coming from, well, what's the inherent nature of the soul? Because they're saying, well, we're modern. But that's nothing to do with the inherent nature of the soul. So you can understand by symptoms, they're not actually talking Dharma. They're talking Upadharma. You know, they're talking just ethics, morality. And even that, it's their own flavor of it. It's not coming down from authority. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, they're saying, my platform of ethics is religion, is devotion, and someone who doesn't follow it is irreligious and deserves to be punished. You know what I'm saying? And that punishment is simply, generally, to, you know, make it hurt, not to purify them, not to correct them. So therefore, it's being done with vengeance, and someone who's dealing with vengeance is in no way qualified to give out punishment. Does that make sense?
False ego platform.
Yes, it's a false ego. Yeah. You're not on that, but it's still misidentification with the material energy, because it's their perception on the world, not God's. That's why it's being brought out, the laws of nature. You have to be very, very careful. So when we judge others in the community, what they've done right, what they've done wrong, we have to be very, very careful, you know, on what is the standard we're using. So it's got to be God's standard. And then in applying it, it has to be applied to the time, place, and circumstance. So it's adjusted according to that. And it should be applied in such a way that the person develops. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay. In the Ishvarupanishad Mantra 9, it is said, those who engage in the culture of nescient activity shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance.
Thus, the sufferings of the individual spirit souls are caused by the soul's misidentification with the material body. When the bonds of that misidentification are cut, then the soul attains self-liberation. To reveal this truth, the author of the sutras speaks the following words. Right, so it's simply to do be our misidentification with the material body. That's all. You give that up, then, how do you say? One is liberated. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Misidentification with the body, to be free of that, we mean that we're always conscious that we are the eternal servants of Krishna, right?
Yes, if we're conscious that we're Krishna's servants, then that's how one gives it up. Because we're so accustomed to it, that's our practice. So we just have to, as much as possible, try to look at things from the position as servant of Krishna, right? But it doesn't mean that in application of an activity, it's not taken into consideration what material body you happen to have. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But it doesn't. But it's not that you identify. Like, you don't have to be a knife to cut a potato, right? You use the knife, and you use the knife according to what kind of knife it is and how big it is, and you hold it, right? According to the knife, you're going to hold it. You're going to hold the handle. You're not going to hold the blade. You're going to cut with the blade, not with the handle, right? So you don't have to identify with it to you be able to use it. Right? So that's the whole idea. You don't have to identify with the body to use it. So there's the idea, I don't identify with, so I do nothing about it. I don't take care of it. I don't do it like that. You know, you have good things like, you know, this, that thing, and you're a musician or that. And we're not this body, Prabhu, and, you know, all this kind of artificial. Its purpose is good. The one is trying to establish within the mind that we're not the body. But sometimes the approach is not very complete. So they'll act, I'm not this body, but without any consideration of the body they're in. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I'm not these vegetables. And so therefore I make no consideration of what vegetable it is, and I try to cook it. I take a squash and I try to deep fry it or something. You know what I'm saying? You know, so different things like that is this balance, is I don't identify with it, that's why I can use it so nicely. And the ones who identify with it won't be able to use it as well. Though there's the idea stemming from ignorance is because of attachment, therefore you work very nicely. You know what I'm saying? You know, like there's always the thing is that because of attachment, that's why you do something, right? So therefore, if you're not attached, you can't do it very well, right? Therefore, here comes a good one. Therefore, you can't actually be a real teacher in that for children unless you have your own. And in fact, only the parents can be the real teachers of the child because they're the only one that's attached enough to actually care. That's taking this point to one form of extreme. But it's a regular daily affair amongst teachers. Because the only motive for taking care of that child is their attachment, because it's their own child. Otherwise, they'd be so lazy they wouldn't take care of anything. Right? So, because of the attachment, they're driven to take care. And they feel others who aren't driven like that won't do a good job. So the idea of doing something out of duty, that doesn't come up. That's not a consideration when you're coming from the platform of ignorance. Otherwise, if you're coming from the platform of ignorance, of course you'll take care. It's your student. You know what I'm saying? And it means those who are trained in that line, which there are still people like that these days, they know the teacher will take better care because the teacher is not attached. And so they can actually see what's good for the child. While the parent being attached, then they'll let them do things they shouldn't do because of that attachment. So the teacher will actually train them better. You know what I'm saying? So from the platform of ignorance, then passion is better. Right? If you're in ignorance, you do nothing. So if you're passion, you'll act. So that's superior to, you know, to inaction, you know, in the way of means of ignorance. But what's being left out of the equation because of the modern scenario is the mode of goodness is better than the mode of passion, where you're acting out of knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's that kind of thing is we have to be very, very careful of. You know what I'm saying? I throw these things in because then there's something that will be practical that we can see.
You could use it on something else, but you know what I'm saying? Just like the Brahmins, they're able to manage the kingdom based on what platform?
Knowledge.
Yes, knowledge. Knowledge, duty, so the mode of goodness. But is the kingdom theirs? No. Right? So they do a very good job. In fact, they're without them, a king can't manage a kingdom. Now, when the king is managing the kingdom, what mode does he work from?
Passion.
And whose kingdom is it?
His.
So there's the sense of ownership. Therefore, from that passion sense of ownership, he's driven to act. But that must be tempered by the Brahmins, who are working from the platform of goodness with knowledge. Not that he's not trained like that, but the point is the field is naturally passionate. So then they do. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, he does fine, but he always keeps the Brahmins, hears from them constantly. Does that make sense? So these things are all very practical in our life. This is philosophy. You know, straight, you know, hair-splitting philosophy. But we've already given so many examples of practical life, day-to-day, where we're not following this philosophy, and that's why we're suffering. Does that make sense? Yeah, yes.
There's an interesting Gita, it's a list of, I think Krishna lists the qualities of himself, saying that he's unattached, but maintainer of all at the same time.
Yes, he's unattached but maintainer of all. Because if you're unattached, you'll be able to do what's best. But we take it that attachment means then you're going to care. And if you're unattached, you don't care. But this is a modern Malecha definition. It's not the Vedic definition. It's not the definition given in the Shastras. So we take that, interpret it according to our, you know, Malecha definition, and then apply it. And when it gets a bad result, then we blame the Vedic. But all it is we have to blame ourselves, for we had a mundane concept of what that is. You know what I'm saying? We're reading through Mahabharata, and in all the anything that's mentioned in relationship to Draupadi, you know, she's asking question, there's some consideration about her, she's been given some special facility, she's asking someone to do something special for her. Right? If you hear about it, that's what's going on. Do we ever hear that Draupadi, you know, the chaste wife of the Pandavas, you know, was there slaving away and, you know, doing all this stuff for them, and, you know, they were sitting back and enjoying themselves? You know what I'm saying? Service is going on, but in the relationship, that's not the prominent element that's seen. It's that care of the Pandavas for her, that considerations for her. That's the Vedic culture, and that's Mahabharata, and that's what's being given, whereas just the culture, not much philosophy, just for general storytelling, so that the mass of people will appreciate it and actually practice it. Right? So how do the devotees get their concept of the husband and wife relationship from the Vedas, when the Vedas don't support how the devotees misinterpret the relationship? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Man doesn't have to make any other endeavor than creating some facility. And then after that, he doesn't have to do anything else for it, take care of it in any way, shape, or form. You know, considerate of her, her emotions, nothing. And then if she's not submissive, then she's the bad guy. So where does that come from? It doesn't come from the Vedas. In no way, shape, or form. It comes from the minds of the modern man and his concept. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Misidentification of the senses.
Like, in a sense that the body, whatever the body's doing, but it's like sense identification. So it's like if we're using the senses, trying to use the senses for our enjoyment.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
Instead of So often people can throw it out thinking, I'll try activity, thinking it's the body.
Yeah.
But it's more like the motive behind the usage of the body in the sense of it. So they throw things out on a gross level, but really.
Yes, means they're taking care, means they're misidentifying with the senses because that's how you perceive the world and deal with the world. So then according to that, your ego, you'll identify that you have a certain kind of senses. And that, and you're going to have, the mind will want to get certain things from the senses. And you use the intelligence, therefore, to guide the senses. So if you see that senses for your satisfaction, then that's the misidentification. If you see it that they're for Krishna's, then that's the actual, you know. But then you also have in between is those who say, okay, we're not the body, we're not the senses, but they don't recognize God either. So then that will also be a problem, like that. So that's a good point from that perspective. Yes.
What should be the inspiration for acting on the platform of duty?
What's the inspiration for acting on the platform of duty? It's the nature. It's just like, what's the we were using before, what's the nature of a knife? What could you say are some major, you know, aspects or elements of a knife? Its ability to cut, okay? So that's its inherent nature, and what's its form? There's something sharp and something hard, okay? And then, anything else?
You can hold it.
You have a facility for holding it, right? So the facility for holding it, and there's an element of it that's sharp, that can do the cutting, and its actual purpose is cutting, right? So it's not for, you know, using as a screwdriver or as a hammer or anything else like that. So, and, you know, it's also not a pry, something to pry open thing, that's called a crowbar, right? You know? So then understanding its inherent nature, you'd only engage it in those activities. Understanding the, you know, aspects or manifestation of its inherent nature, you can identify where the cutting edge is and where the place for holding it is. And so then you will, you know, your hand will do the holding, and the cutting edge you'll put, you know, in contact with what you want to cut. Right? So that is duty. Understanding the inherent nature of it. If you have to, if you're supposed to cut something, then you are going to have to do that with a knife. So that's the meaning of duty. That's religion. It's not necessarily taken like that. It's taken as the externals and the ritual that's there. But religion is actually the inherent nature of things. Ultimately, then the inherent nature is coming from Krishna. The nature of the jiva is the material energy. Krishna is how his potency is, how he's expanded. So seeing all that, then you actually understand really how to deal with the material world. So it's the most practical, you know, kind of thing. But it won't be, if you use the word duty, then it's not good, you know, in this modern context. Because there's ideas, duty is something you do that you don't want to do, you know, unless you're, you know, from some kind of, you know, old school training and all that, then somehow or another duty has a kind of dignity to it and all that. You know, so in connection with the military or service to the country or, you know, those kind of things, welfare works, then people will use the concept duty in a very nice way. But when it comes to day-to-day life, then they figure, you know, it's got to be a little more spontaneous. It's based on attachment. Right? Because ignorance without attachment, you know, then it's not, you're not going to do anything, and without variety it gets boring. So therefore they don't like anything. It becomes ritualized, dogmatic, this, that. But when it comes to things that they'll consider higher, then duty's very good. So we see as the Vedic culture is that platform of duty is where you're supposed to work from, even for normal activities. You know what I'm saying? So therefore it's something actually considered glorious, but unfortunately it's not being perceived in that way. Yes.
The idea that proprietorship turns sand into gold, does that
yes.
also come from this concept that attachment leads to better care?
Is the
Oh, is it, that means the path. Means a proprietorship turns sand into gold, yes. But it just depends on how proprietorship is perceived, right? So, your lowest level is I have no attachment, so therefore I have nothing to do with it, okay? Then I have attachment, I have something to do with it. Then there's higher than that is the sense of duty. So therefore, you'll deal with it. So it's just a matter of what you're attached to. One is you're attached to doing nothing. One you're attached to, you know, the results gained from doing activity. And the other is the attachment to the proper performance of duties. That's why ultimately then even that has to be given up, that it's just for Krishna's pleasure, sarva dharma paritya. Like that. So it's a matter of where the attachment is. And whether it's like here it says where there's over the top or not. Unnecessary attachment or aversion. You know, if you're dealing with just the right amount, then you'll do a good job. But if you increase it, then something's going to go wrong. Something's going to go wrong. Is that okay? Okay. So then how to reveal the truth about the living entities suffering, you know, in this material world by misidentification with the body. So that's Sutra 19. Because it restores the soul to its original nature, renunciation of materialism brings liberation. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Misidentification with the material body places the soul in an inauspicious condition, a condition that breeds worthless material desires. By renouncing those material desires, the soul becomes free from the cycle of repeated birth and death. This is so because by that renunciation, the soul attains its original nature, which is spiritual and full of bliss. That is the meaning here. This is described in the following words of Taittiriya Upanishad. Okay, so... Okay, yeah, so now we've got... Okay. So the original nature of the living entity to be able to act within the service to the Lord, that means that the material things that are getting in the way of that material identification, that being given up, that frees you from that. So then it's not an obstacle in your acting in your natural constitutional position. Right? But always, the point is liberation is only useful if it brings you to Krishna consciousness. On its own, not very. The Taittiriya Upanishad 2.4.1 says, O saintly one, a person who knows spiritual bliss never fears. Right? Because fear comes from the platform of misidentification. You identify as separate from God, then you become fearful. If you identify in connection with God, you're never fearful. So it's saying here, a person who knows spiritual bliss is never fearful. Because if you have attained the prayojana of spirituality, that means the sambandha already has to be there. Right? Like you can't have prayojana without the sambandha. Right? If sambandha is in place, then prayojana, you get the results. So if he has no spiritual bliss, he's never fearful. Right? Because also then there's also a result from that it goes back. Right? It means Aniruddha always goes back to Prajumna. Right? So then in that state, it reduces fear because of that spiritual identification. So then that reduces fear, which means then the spiritual appreciation will be greater, which reduces the fear. It just keeps going in a cycle. In Sandilya's Bhakti Sutra, it is said, 3.2.93, quote, the soul is both one and different from the Supreme. When he is freed from the material body, the soul is glorious like the sun. Because the sun also represents the Lord's qualities, right? It's a reflection of the Brahman. So the Brahman is Krishna's qualities. So the soul will be glorious like the sun in that he has all good qualities. Like that. And they're connected to the Lord. He is free from the pure body, the soul is glorious like the sun because it's not different. The same qualities are there, but at the same time as there's a difference. He's an individual. Like that. And so also the non-difference is that just like the qualities, the Lord's, the Lord has so many wonderful qualities that come in the form of Brahman, right? I mean, or we can, they're reflected as Brahman, is that then the living entity, when he's freed from the material contamination, then being connected to the Lord, then those same kind of qualities will be there in him. You know what I'm saying? So just as the Lord shines with good qualities, the devotee in contact with the Lord will shine with those same good qualities. Right? At the same time, there's a difference. He still is a living entity. So both with these good qualities can interact. Does that make sense? It's not that he becomes the Lord, or he's just separate and there's no common qualities. In the Katha Upanishad 1:2:17-18, it is said, quote, "Taking shelter of the Supreme is the most auspicious activity. Taking shelter of the Supreme is the most auspicious activity." Maybe it says this twice. "One who takes shelter of the Supreme becomes glorious in the spiritual world. For the soul, there is never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain." Right, so you get these, because Bhagavad Gita is Upanishad, so therefore many of the verses sometimes are almost exactly the same or the same, like that, in the other Upanishads.
Does that mean that we must just, because there is Prabhupada quotes in the purport of that verse, there's only one word different.
He says vipassya. It could be. I think it is vipassya, because it's vipassya. Like that comes here. I can only remember that. It means just that you said it. I can get the word. I can't get what's before it. In the Katha Upanishad 1:2:6, Yamaraj says, "Fools intoxicated by wealth say this world is all and there is no other. These fools will not be glorious in their next birth. Again and again they will come under my grip." Right? Because he's saying glorious means you're not under his control. So anybody in the material world, pious or impious, if they're not God conscious, are under his control. So his point is if you're under his control, you're not glorious. So unless you're freed from material existence, then you become glorious. Right? That's Yamaraj's. And he deals with everybody. You know, even very pious people. Nariga, unlimited pious activity, still, Yamaraj deals with them. So to him, that's not glorious. Right? In other words, if you're standing in front of Yudhishthira because he's got to make a judgment on you, then it's not glorious. Yeah. Okay. In the Katha Upanishad 1:2:9, it is also said, "O dear one, the truth cannot be known by material logic. It is known only by learning it from a self-realized soul. Because you are sincere and determined, you have learned the truth. O dear Nachiketa, I pray that my other disciples will be like you." Right, because Nachiketa has taken Yamaraj as his guru. Like that, so he's instructing him. Like that. So by material logic, you can't understand it. It's only when it's coming down in parampara, then it can be understood, because material logic won't function, because Krishna is beyond material logic. Because material logic means I will use my intelligence based on senses. I can only, once I've gained information through the senses, can then I analyze it. You understand? I can't analyze something that I haven't gotten, and that's gotten through the senses, so the senses are imperfect. Therefore, all material logic will be imperfect. Right? But that which is coming down from the parampara, that's perfect. So it is transcendental. Then taking the intelligence, applying it on that, you're starting with something real. That's why seemingly you should be able to deal with it. But unless it's come from parampara, it won't give you a spiritual result. Right? Now taking that shabda, what you've heard from authority, and then contemplating that in relation to what you see about you with your senses, and then you can see its application, then that brings realization. Right? Knowledge means you know what it is, how it's used. Realization means you understand, you know, why it's that way. You will behave in that way. You know what I'm saying? So there's no speculation. So how is it grounded? Because there's a method. That's Dharma. So that's why philosophy without religion is speculation. Because if you know the philosophy, then you know that everything has its inherent nature as given by God. Therefore, you're going to deal with everything according to its inherent nature. And that dealing has been given by God and by the great sages. So therefore, that's tradition. That's the culture. Right? So if there isn't that, then it'll be speculation, because it could be this, it could be that. You know, it's like you could take the knife and hold it at the back and, you know, taking it, you know, and then holding up and dropping it, and then it'll go down and make a bit of a cut in the potato. And you keep doing that. If you're expert enough, you can maybe get a line across, or, you know, all the dotted lines and that, you know, so you can break it, rip it on the dotted line or something. You know, or in that, you know, then some will do that, some will, you know, throw it up in the air, someone can do a spin on it. Like that. You know, I mean, so many things that you could speculate that could be done. You know, I could, you know, fix the knife in place, put it in a, you know, what do you call it, you know, a vise and everything, and then put the potato on the board and then lift the board onto the knife, you know, like that. And so many things you could do, but it's all speculation. Why? Because it's not coming from any culture or tradition. Because you don't necessarily fully appreciate the use of the knife and yourself, because you're looking at the knife, what you could do. And yes, you could do those things, but the point is for the ease of the knife, you know. In other words, if you have a potato, you have a knife, you have a cutting board, and you have your hand, what is the most direct, efficient, you know, pleasant relationship, right? You have the board, then you have on top of that the potato, on top of that the knife, and at one end of the knife, the appropriate end, you have your hand, right? And then by applying a little pressure in the simplest way, the potato is cut. These, all these others are more as over endeavor. So that's why then the Vedic culture will be the most practical, streamlined thing, because you're dealing with the nature of everything. So that compatible nature of these four things blended together then makes it work very nicely. But as soon as you overdo one of those other things, it makes something else more prominent. You know, makes the knife prominent, makes your technique more prominent, makes, you know anything else, the potato prominent, you know. Like that. You could also not say, you know, put it, you know, connect it to the wall and throw the potato at it or something, you know, like that. So, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
What's the opposite of the religion without philosophy?
Religion without philosophy is that you do what people before have done that is based on the Shastra, but you don't know why it's doing that way, so you'll be ritualistic. That would be dogmatic. Right? And so that would be the difficulty, is that you can't explain it. Therefore, then it's just sentiment. So why are you doing it? It's only sentiment. Oh, my parents did like that and their parents did like that. Nice. But the point is you should know why they're doing like that. Then, were they only sentimental, or did they actually have any brains and know why they were doing it? You know? So you need the two to go together. Otherwise, like it said here, by speculation, you'll never understand anything. Right? Bhishma Parva 5:22, it is said, anything transcendental to material nature is called inconceivable, whereas arguments are all mundane. Since mundane arguments cannot touch transcendental subject matters, one should not try to understand transcendental subject matters through mundane arguments. Right? Therefore, this whole logical presentation is only useful if it's in connection with Krishna consciousness. So in other words, you start from Shabda, then you apply it to Pratyaksha. But if you start from Pratyaksha and Anuman, then you'll never come to the conclusion of Pratyaksha, of Shabda, because Shabda is transcendental. And you can't get to transcendental from mundane. You know what I'm saying? You just can't. You know, it means transcendental is made from transcendence, so you have to work with transcendence. You can't work with mundane and get transcendence. They're two different things. Is that okay? Yes.
What's the position of argument and logic for the upper avidhi?
What is logic and argument for the upper avidhi? It works very well. Means like that. That's what it said, is that that's how, you know, all these different persons, these inventors and other, you know, intellectuals have found so many nice, because they look at it, they analyze it, and they come up with something. Of course, because they're not seeing it in connection with the Supreme. Therefore, the application is not considering everything. They made the car, it does nice things, but it pollutes the atmosphere. So therefore, it's not complete. Like, while the chariot, you know, doesn't do that. It works nicely, it doesn't pollute. You know what I'm saying? So all these different things is that it's not complete, because it's coming from an incomplete state, so its results will be incomplete. While Krishna is complete, so whatever comes from him is complete. So if you connect it to him, then the application will be complete. Is that okay? Okay, we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. That you speak with Mother Garuda. You know, I don't see this as a problem, but you know, it's just is the rule you can't come into Mayapur project?
Yes.
Because we're still part of the project here, that's a difficulty.
Because it's very painful, don't see the deity. Because if one maybe is in Maya, stay outside, it's all in Maya.
Yeah, yeah, no, this is the kind of things that I'm talking about.
Yes.
Is that you can't have a service, you can't be, you know, nicely situated, but it means the karmis, you know, can come in and see the deity, so why can't they? So this is what I'm meaning, is it's just done to hurt. It's not done to actually improve. This is what to do. But that's what I'm talking about.
Because I think I need your help, because now don't hear nobody, no?
No, no, but you can take the lectures and all that and get here at home. Because the problem is we're part of the Mayapur project here. We're not actually outside.
It's very frustrated that can see the deity anyway. And the problem is that my son now is going to the school, international, and normally it's with him, no? It's okay, but don't go more in the temple now. I hope that come also in the next time.
Hi, Krishna Govinda. I think this is one of the girl's clips. Oh, it's broken. Oh, it's a broken clip. Okay, I'll just put it in the bin. Should we go? I have to go to...